Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich, and this is Crime Talk. Today, we have a guest. The guest's name is Jim Terry. He is a private investigator, and the reason why he's of interest today is that he was working for Dylan Round's family, the grandparents specifically, to try and locate his whereabouts. Well, he apparently isn't working for them anymore, but he came on to share what he has found out to date. Obviously, we weren't there during his interviews that he did with individuals or on those calls, but we believe that people should have all the information, and then you can decide if maybe this information could lead to finding Dylan Rounds. So hope you enjoy the interview. Leave me a comment below. Have a great day. All right, ladies and gentlemen, today we have a guest with us here on Crime Talk. Today we have Jim Terry. Now, Jim Terry is a private investigator based out of Biloxi, Mississippi, and his company is called Gulf Coast Investigations. And he has some interesting information to share with us today regarding the Dylan Rounds case, but he's also worked on some other very interesting cases as well. So first, Jim, welcome to the program. Welcome to Crime Talk.
Hey, listen, thank you so much for having me. So many people got me hooked onto what you do here, and your way of taking on some of these cases, especially with your background, is very impressive. So I'm very excited to be here.
Well, thank you very much. So why don't you just give me a quick bio? How did you kind of get into being a private investigator, and what area do you kind of specialize in?
Well, about 95% of all private investigators either have a military or law enforcement background, some both. I don't have either. My background is pro football. In fact, I still actually technically nowadays still play a sport called arena football, even at the advanced age of 45 as a place kicker. A lot of guys I played college and pro ball with were bounty hunters. They were skip tracers. They thought I'd be pretty good at that. I'm about 6'3", 225 pounds, but I have the ability to carry a firearm, and some of them didn't because they were felons, but they were still bounty hunters. I looked into it. I didn't really want to chase, you know, convicted sex offenders into Brooklyn, New York. So I looked into the private investigating thing, and I thought 7 years ago, sooner or later, the football career would come to an end. I've been lucky I'm still playing. But my mom says, if you go to the private investigating courses at Hillsborough Community College, she's a retired school teacher, she'd go with me. So my mom and I went back to college together. It was pretty neat. They were night courses, and I wanted to specialize in missing persons cases. What they did not tell me in the state of Florida, even up to the last day when we graduated, because I thought we'd find out how to open up a business and all this stuff, is that, okay, you're graduating. Now you got to be an intern and work as an intern under somebody for 2 years. Well, I'm making over $100,000 a year playing arena football. I wasn't going to give that up to work for somebody for free. So I had to find a state where I could open my license up right away. Mississippi came calling. I opened the business up in Biloxi, bought a home there, and have worked there for the last 6 years. So even though I got the education in Florida, I didn't understudy anybody there. I was an intern. I moved to Mississippi and branched out my business to Idaho, Colorado, Wyoming, South Dakota, Alaska, and of course here in the great state of Mississippi. So I'm the only private investigator in the country that does not charge an hourly wage. I charge a one-time lump sum fee at the beginning. And I specialize in three specific types of private investigating for missing persons cases. I do a lot of celebrity cases. Not necessarily Tom Cruise goes missing, but maybe his Golden Globe Award does, or Tom Brady's Super Bowl ring. I'll do things. People that go missing with a vehicle, and minority missing persons cases. An African-American or Hispanic girl in Detroit who's 5'9", 200 pounds. It's a totally different missing persons case with the media and law enforcement than it is Gabby Petito. You got a 21-year-old blonde-haired, blue-eyed, cute white girl that goes missing with a college background. Everybody and their mother is looking for her. I got a lot of cases where I got girls that are not that demographic, and I can't even get them on Facebook. So it's a little bit of a different case. And because of where I went to college, I was the only white student in all black college. I went to Clark Atlanta University in Atlanta, Georgia, where I played my college football. I was the minority, and that's kind of what bled me into the minority missing persons cases. So those are what I've backgrounded in the last 6.5 years. And I'm very fortunate to say I've never had a case that didn't have an outcome. I've never not found my person or thing, and that's very rare, but I only handle one case at a time.
All right. Well, that's quite a background. And I mean, I love the fact that you, you know, I still think the best learning tool is just going to do it. You can learn a certain amount of things under a, you know, the tutelage of somebody, but until you have to go do it and, you know, hang that shingle, so to speak, it's the ultimate learning tool for sure. So,
well, like my mom said when we were in private investigating class, if you're good at something, never do it for free. So I wasn't going to work as an intern for 2 years and then, you know, hopefully maybe get my own practice. So yeah. I just, for $26, opened it up in Mississippi. And it was the best decision I ever made.
All right. Well, let's talk about the case that you were, sounds like, recently working on, but maybe no longer are. Tell us about the case of Dylan Rounds. How did you get involved in that? And then let's talk about what are the facts and what'd you find out?
A young man went missing in Boise, Idaho, where I'm also a private investigator in the state of Idaho, several years ago, named Anthony Smith. And I rescued him and found him living with a militia group as an underage teen in a town called Bad Axe, Michigan. That case propelled some of the media outlets out there when this happened to call me. The kid was roughly the same age. They didn't know if he ran off. Similar backgrounds, affluent families. Kids looked roughly the same, a little bit of a similar story. And they said, well, you reach out to these parents. They're a couple of days into this, and you might be the only guy. Listen, there's 5,900 licensed private investigators, almost 6,000 licensed private investigators in the state of Florida. In the state of Idaho, there's 27. None of them do missing persons, except maybe looking for a high school sweetheart or a birth mom. So sure. I got in contact with the parents, which was very interesting because the mom hung up on me immediately. She would not talk to me. I guess I sounded like a car salesman. The father talked to me. I was going to give him a nickel's worth of free advice. It costs nothing to talk to me. I explained to him that if he had his son's cell phone and called it, what would happen? And he says, well, when I call my son's cell phone number, it goes right to voicemail. I says, why don't you FaceTime it? He hung up on me. And I never heard from them again. The media outlet called me back the next day, and they said, what happened? I said, the family won't talk to me. They go, did you tell them who you were? And I said, yeah, I talked too fast. I guess I got a Mississippi area code. They think I'm an ambulance chaser. He says, sure. Let me get the grandparents who own the farm to call you. They did with Dylan Rollins' aunt, Miss Wells. And within 3 days, they hired me. The proclivity in this whole thing was not to tell the parents I was working for the grandparents. That there was a big divide in the family. The grandparents thought that the mother, who was estranged from the family at some point, we later found on, abandoned these three children for up to 4 years, dropped them off at the father's house and never came back. She also has $2.6 million worth of liens and lawsuits pending, or not pending, owed. She's got 2 points, which I thought was a very interesting part of the case. They thought with everything that had gone on with her, with the relationship with the father and everything, and as volatile as he could be, and with their history, that I should work for them and uncover any and everything. As you would know, this is one of the top lawyers in the state of Colorado. A private investigator can't arrest anybody. I have no law enforcement background. I was hired to give the family information that the police couldn't, or that other people weren't bringing to the table, stuff that might hurt people's feelings. So I'm not necessarily looking to solve the case, but give the family information to push up law enforcement, because a missing person, as you know, my friend, is not a crime. Right now, you can get up and move to Seattle, and it's not a crime, even if you don't
tell anybody. And not tell anybody. Yeah, you can do it. You pack up and go.
We're in a culture right now, not to be long-winded on this, that people see a missing person. Now, if the kid's 4 years old or 7 years old, heck, there's a pretty good chance he didn't get up and move to Kansas City. There's probably an issue there. But a 39-year-old guy, a 19-year-old boy that maybe wants to live on the beach in San Diego and experience a different lifestyle is not a crime. These parents didn't get that. That's very difficult to tell parents, hey, it's been 3 days. This isn't a crime. That's why the cops don't care. They got rapes and murders to deal with. They'll deal with a 16-year-old with daddy issues later. So I started looking into this case, and the very first thing was to look into a man named Chase Venstra. And that's where this thing went crazy, because I found Chase Venstra through his parents. They were willing to talk to me. There was three or four things a private investigator could do that the cops can't. And I'd love to hear your take on this. And this is one of my pitches to the family when they hire me. Number one, I'm not bound by the same constraints law enforcement is. If I'm interviewing somebody and they say lawyer, I just ask my second question. That means nothing to me. If a cop is told lawyer by somebody being looked into to a crime or a they're done. You know that. So that's one of the things. I don't have to stop. Number two, I'm like Batman. I could go to different states and different areas. Cops are bound by a jurisdiction, a town, or a county. I can go to different states, especially with the reciprocity in this. I can work on this case full time because it's the only case I'm taking. Cops might have 200 cases on their desks. And I can answer the family's questions 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, where a cop might go home at 5 o'clock and he won't get them till Monday. They thought that was a good deal. And I dove into this by finding the original man that they had a bounty on that they thought was involved in their son's disappearance. He came from a good family. I spoke with him, and what he told me that Dylan Rounds was into and going through in that town is what took this thing in a whole separate direction.
All right. And so this Chase Venstra, that's who you talked to, where you kind of learned a lot of this information. So who is he, and how is he related to Dylan Rounds?
The story out there, now we're dealing with a town that has about 200 people in it. It is almost completely desert. Of the 200 or so folks that live in that town, 74 registered sex offenders. That's virtually every other person you run into is a registered pervert. That's a felon. That's not even counting the felons for like bar fights or DUIs or whatever the other case. I mean, those are just the pedophiles, the sex offenders. It's not a good area, my friend. These are very tough people. Most of them are squatting on what they call BLM land, which does not stand for Black Lives Matter. That is public land that they're going and putting a shed on or an RV and living in. I've been to some bad areas, my friend, and I did not know places like this in the country still existed. Well, this kid at 17 years old, his grandfather, who's the one that hired me, bought him a piece of property after he got his GED. He wanted no more to do with high school. And put him out on that property and bought him a farm without the family's knowledge. His parents didn't know the grandfather did this until the kid was out there. That was the first problem. So Chase Venstra was the man in the original part of the story that even precedes me that was bloody and supposedly might have had something to do with his disappearance. And he came out of the woods and he wasn't wearing shoes and he was walking into the desert and this young man had him, but they couldn't find him. Well, I found him by telling his parents, you could talk to me. I want to get your son out of this. I'm not going to arrest him. That's why I wouldn't call the cops. I want to get you out of this. He had outstanding warrants in other states. He called me, and what he told me is what put this thing into a different direction. He was the original boogeyman, Chase Venstra.
So Chase Venstra is allegedly the person that Dylan Rounds told, I think, his grandmother when she spoke with him on May 28th, that he had this strange interaction with somebody walking down the road. Is that right?
And he was barefoot and he was bloody. It's not alleged. I talked to Chase. He said, that's me. Chase admitted to being a bad person. He said, I get into a lot of fights. He told me that he steals a lot from people out there, which is probably why he was running through the desert. You know, he probably was stealing. These people have methamphetamine problems. These people have major drug issues. So they run around out there 50 miles from the closest cop robbing each other. And that's very important later in the story. That is exactly the man. His parents put him on the phone. They gave me a timeline. I found out that he was on camera at a Little Caesar's Pizza right around the time. And at that point, he seemed to kind of go off the radar to me, and he was willing to help me. But what he told me in that conversation is what took me into a different direction, because I'm just trying to cross people off the list.
Okay, so when you spoke with Chase, sounds like he's cooperative. What does he tell you? Tell us the story.
He was overly cooperative. He also gave me other people, including his son who worked on. He said that he knew Dylan Rounds. He had worked on his property. He had also worked for another man that he said was his arch enemy, who he had recently gotten into an altercation with, and was one of the reasons he was out there with no shoes on getting away from the man. He said this man had been stalking him and that they were arch enemies. And that man's name is Kurt Wadsworth, which is an extremely interesting and big name out in that area, because two of Kurt Wadsworth's brothers are registered sex offenders. And I says, as I ask everybody, I says, tell me something that's not in the newspapers. Tell me something the cops don't know. Tell me something about this case and this missing boy that would not necessarily be something you would tell police. He says, oh, he's gay. And I says, what? He says, oh yeah, he's gay. I says, okay. Now, a lot of people take offense to that. Because I bring that out, I'm outing somebody that might have that lifestyle. Maybe they didn't want it known out there. There's a religious aspect here. The family are part of the Church of Latter-day Saints. That is extremely important in this case, because I was yelled at about talking about him possibly being gay. But I'm now taking this from a convicted felon who just walked out of the woods barefoot. I needed some more people to verify that. So he put his son on the phone, who was 17 years old and had no criminal background. And his son said, oh yeah, that kid's gay. And I says, okay, well, if he's gay, that means there's a significant other. Just like Gabby Petito, everybody looked at Brian, whatever. You got to look at the boyfriend. You got to look at the girlfriend, whether they're gay or not. I says, great. Who's he dating out there? Who's the guy? Well, the guy was Kurt Venstra. And the guy is 61 years old. and has a history of dressing in drag in that town. Well, now I start talking to everybody in town, and everybody in town that I'm talking to there says the same thing. Oh, yeah, he was grooming that kid since he was the age of 17. Well, now I got a problem. I still haven't spoke to the parents. I got to go back to the grandparents and say, hey, Grandma, Grandpa, and Aunt Wells, we got a problem here. Problem not, is not that he's gay. The problem is the guy he was gay with is a 61-year-old who's running around with his brothers that are registered sex offenders. And did you know your son, grandson, or did you know your grandson or nephew was into this lifestyle? And they said, do you know what our religion is? And I says, no. And they says, we're part of the Church of Latter-day Saints. We don't have gay people in our family. And I says, you do now. And it was after about 35 interviews, all with the same story, most of the people that didn't know each other. And I says, I think we need to get the parents involved in these conversations. They're running around town on the media and they don't know what's going on out there. I think I can make some clarity to this. And that's when, for the first 8 days, I went down a rabbit hole out there that you couldn't possibly believe.
So let me ask you this. When you were speaking with Chase, I mean, obviously this guy, he's telling you he's not a great guy. He's obviously gotten some sort of altercation, walking barefoot down the street, all that good stuff. Obviously part of the job as a private investigator, whether you're working for the family or an attorney, is you have to judge credibility. I mean, I'm sure you've had people lie to your face and you knew that they were lying, or you find out later. What was your sense of credibility as it related to Chase Venstra?
I believe half of what I see and none of what I hear. I didn't believe a word he told me. So I verified everything. So nothing. He's a felon. He's on the run. He's bloody. He's in the desert with no shoes on. I gave Chase Venstra as much credibility as you'd get with any drug addict that pops out of the desert in the middle of the summer with no shoes on, full of blood, that a 19-year-old kid has a run-in with. None. But his parents were good people. His relatives were good people. There was people in the community that said, hey, Chase Venstra's garbage. And I says, well, tell me something that you don't know about this case. Well, they started telling me the same story. What's interesting is the person that the family was put onto, Chase Venstra, before I got onto the case, you got to ask, where did they get their information? What made them look at this Chase Venstra fella? If you look at his mugshot, it's terrifying. But when I spoke to him, he looked totally different. He had lost 50 pounds since his last arrest. He didn't have the beard. He wasn't as scary. Now, I'm not scared by too many people anyway. I've dealt with the real thing, but this guy was pretty close to it. So I started looking around and I says, well, who told you that this man who called me, whose parents are school teachers, and who told you that this guy was so bad? Who's the one that told you he had something to do with Dylan Rounds' disappearance? And the family gave it up right away. They said, oh, Kurt Wadsworth. I said, by the way, to the parents, Kurt Wadsworth, the same one your son's dating? And they said, that's not possible. Our son doesn't date anybody. Can you prove that he's gay? I says, I don't know. Can you prove that he's straight? Couldn't find one prom picture, one girlfriend. Then people started coming out of the woodwork when I went public with it. Hookers at truck stops that tried to get dates with Dylan Rounds. Women and good-looking kid, looks like a college baseball player. Why wouldn't he have a few girls that would make a run at him? And then Kurt Venstra called me. So the one that the family was originally turned on to, Chase Venstra, was turned on to by his archenemy, Kurt Wadsworth, and his two sex offender brothers.
Got it. And so Kurt Venstra, according to you, is a 61-year-old guy that likes to dress in drag and was basically grooming Dylan. What did he have to say? I mean, this has got to be good.
You know, I interviewed a bunch of people, including the people he has purchased his bar from. He's also the bar owner, and his family is the bar owner from the bar that Dylan Rounds was frequenting, the only bar, real bar in town. By the way, I'll let you draw the conclusions on this. The name of the bar is the Saddle Sore. Do you know what a saddle sore is?
Basically when you ride your saddle and saddle too long?
Well, what I was told by a couple of buddies of mine that are bullfighters is that those are sores that grow on your butt from being in a saddle. Doesn't sound like the most masculine bar in the world. So what I did was I looked at that bar. I looked at the people that were there and I spoke with the woman that owned the note on the bar, that owns the property. Kurt Wadsworth's family lives on the property in a trailer, which I had found out the boy had been spending days and weeks in his trailer. And we're not even talking about a trailer like an RV or a double wide. We're talking about like a 16-foot camper. He had been staying in this nightly with him after drinking at the bar and eating at the bar. So I asked the woman that owned this, 71-year-old landowner out there, tell me about Kurt Venstra. She says, my son, Ellen Berg is her name, and she's been out there in the press, and she has no problem talking about this. She says, oh, for years, my son would go and knock on his trailer. We'd bring him food from the bar. We'd cut his grass. We'd do stuff with him. My son caught him a half a dozen times dressed up as a woman, which she told me is she called it Bruce Jennering it, or said that he was dressed up like Bugs Bunny when Bugs Bunny would be in a cartoon and wanted to look like a girl in a saloon. And I says, you got to be kidding me. Listen, one or two people might have an axe to grind or try to bury somebody that way. But now I've got 70-year-old bar owners, real estate agents, school teachers, all telling me the same story about this guy. And this kid is hanging around with him, spending the night there. It's starting to make sense.
Sure. And so were you able to speak directly with Kurt Venstra?
Yeah, he gave me a call. I called him. He called me back. And I had been told that Kurt Venstra was a Crescendo guy. What I mean by that is he's the kind of guy where he talks like this. And when I got him on the phone, he says, I want that kid to be found. I can't wait for that kid to be found. He's a good kid and a hard worker. Well, then I wanted to push his buttons. And I didn't have any more belief in him than I did Chase Venstra. So what I said was really, I said, well, I talked to a couple of women that were hitting on him in a bar. A couple of, they call them lot lizards. A couple of hookers at this truck stop.
Handle those cases.
There you go. And I, hey, listen, some of them are taxpayers. And I said, you know, Kurt, these women seem to like him. I said, he must have run off with one of them. I got a couple of women here that I think really liked him. And he exploded. He started yelling at me. And he said, listen, we don't. And that's the part where I said, uh-oh. He says, we don't deal with women like that. All these women want are money. All they want is money. The reason this boy, and I says, wait a minute, this kid wasn't into girls at all, Kurt. Now, Kurt didn't know what I had heard from other people that I talked to Chase. And he said, he never would have dealt with women. All I told him, and he knows that all women do is cost you money. Now, that might be true, but he got upset. And the way that I've described his anger in that conversation was if a jealous girlfriend or boyfriend was mad and I was questioning them. He was jealous like a girlfriend or a boyfriend would have been. How dare you say he was into those two women? That's my guy. I mean, listen, I might not know a lot about nothing, and I might have been born yesterday, but I've been up all night. And I'm going to tell you right now, I knew exactly where he was coming from. So I asked him the million-dollar question. What do I care? I said, you gay? Are you gay? He didn't say no. He says, I have 8 children. I says, Elton John's got kids. What's that mean? I says, listen, I'm not going to out you. If you're gay and you had a relationship with this kid, as long as he wasn't underage, let's not forget he's known him for 2 years. What do you know about that?
Yeah.
And he started lambasting homosexuals. And I'm sitting there listening to this and I'm like, this is a guy who's trying too hard. There's something wrong here. And I says, okay, so you date a lot of women, Kurt? And that's when he hung up. So that was about a 15-minute conversation. Yeah. I had mixed some other questions in there. It wasn't all about his sexuality. Some of the stuff was about what they did together and his camper, why this kid at 19 would be at a bar and did he drink? He said, no, he was there eating hamburgers. I saw people that saw the kid drinking, and I don't care if he was drinking at 19 years old, but I knew he was lying to me. A lot of times when, and I'm sure you do this as a litigator, when I ask questions, I already know the answers to them. I just want to see if you know the answer I do.
Yeah, no, that's the way.
5 times in that conversation.
Interesting. So he hung up on you. He said he wants, you know, the kid found, but he didn't have any idea where, you know, the police should go look.
I mean, no. He told me right away, my friend. He said, go look at Chase Venstra. I said, I already talked to him. And then that's when he kind of put 2 and 2 together that's where I was getting the gay thing. And he says, well, you know, he's gay. And I says, oh, really? Can you prove that? I talked to his son. I talked to his girlfriend. I talked to his parents. What do you got on that? So that was kind of how that conversation ended up.
Okay. So after you talk to Kurt Venstra, he hangs up with you. Where does your investigation go from there?
I got to go back to the parents. And I said, hey, listen, this guy's, they had a relationship. I says, you know, and then I started getting phone calls from people saying that his brother, Troy Wadsworth, who is a frightening looking human being, just Google this guy. And if your producers can put up a picture of Troy Wadsworth, the best way I can explain him is he looks like every serial killer in any horror movie that you've ever watched between 1984 and 1986. This guy is the real deal and has a record to back it up. This is Kurt Wadsworth's brother. He also has another brother who is a registered sex offender as well and has a lengthy thing. They also have things on their records for keeping people in captivity, for keeping them in sheds, for abducting people. Some of these women never came back. I would love for a guy to look at these cases, because I don't know how these guys are still walking the streets out there. So I started looking into his family. I had to go back to the Rounds family, and I said, listen, my friends, I got to cross people off here, and I am not able to cross off Kurt Wadsworth. They're in town, and they knew that I didn't have to come into the state. They got helicopters. They've got search dogs. They've got all this stuff. What do I need to do? I'm not a search and rescue guy, but I'm finding the family information, and the grandparents and the aunt are like, go, go, go. Well, here enters the mom. My son's not gay. My son, how dare you say that? My son's not gay. Here, don't worry about Kurt Venstra. I need you to run a license plate. I need you to look at these two other missing kids. I need you to look at this SUV. And I'm like, with all due respect to the mom, you didn't hire me. I don't work for you. You know,
yeah.
It would be like an uncle or an aunt of somebody that you're representing calling you up in the middle of the day and saying, hey, fruit of the poisonous tree. Why don't you look into that, or whatever the term is? And you're like, okay, I'm sorry. Hey, I'm glad that's your uncle. But, you didn't pay me. So I'm telling this woman. Yeah. And by the way, the family had warned me about her ahead of time. They had told me before this is all over with, this woman will fight with everybody. She's fought with the FBI. She fought with law enforcement. She fought with the private investigator. She fought with the townspeople. There's people out there that do own bed and breakfasts, that own car dealerships and restaurants that have called me that said, this lady is turning this place upside down. And the analogy I've gotten from what she's done out there from the people that do have businesses, alpaca farmers, there's something called the sun tunnels. So there's bed and breakfasts up there. This small town, what good part there was of, is now burnt. And the reason it's burnt, and Natalie Holloway. How many kids went to Aruba drinking after Natalie Holloway went missing for the next two decades? Zero. Nobody went down there no more. They ended up going to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. So people are now losing their crops. They're not being dealt with. Nobody's coming in because of what's going on out there. And now all the meth heads are stirred up. So I had to tell this mother that. And it was not an issue for the 8 days I looked into these people. They did not want me to stop until I said, I need more people to come forward. And it's my investigation, even though I'll take direction from the family. I'm the chief. I'm the head cook here. So what I did was I went public with this. The family didn't talk to me for 3 days, then released a press release that said I was into conspiracy theories, although they never said their son was not gay.
So the family basically fired you, the grandparents. Correct?
That's a great question. And I'm going to tell you, I never spoke to the grandparents. It was a press release sent out by the parents who never hired me. Here's the other thing, good thing about me as a private investigator. I was paid in full up front. I'm not an hourly employee. Whether it took me a week or a year, I get the same check and I got it up front from the aunt. You can't fire a guy who's been paid in full. So the family can say they fired me. I was paid in full. They can choose not to work with me anymore. And that would have been great if they would have said, hey, listen, you're a little too high caliber. You're a little too much of a loudmouth. We don't like the way you're going with this. We're going to let law enforcement step in. They were complaining about law enforcement. I was the only one giving them new stuff. What they did was they went to social media. They grabbed a bunch of what we call web sleuths, a bunch of different people on the internet that have radio shows and talk shows. And those people said, forget the PI, we'll help you. They just told her what she wanted to hear as long as she would come on their shows. And by the way, instead of calling, if they would have called me and said, hey, listen, back off, we'll call you in a couple of weeks, it would have been fine. What they did was they put press releases out and went on the media and said the private investigator's a whack job and that he's in it. And maybe I am, but I was, we'll see. The great thing about this, and then I'm done being long-winded with you, is the reason I do private investigating cases and most PIs don't is it's a pass-fail business. There's no in-between. He's either going to be found or he's not going to be found. Whether he's dead or alive is a second consequence as to whether the person is found. I have a lot of parents say I'd rather find my son dead than never find him at all. So so sooner or later, this is all going to come out in the wash. Now, all I got to do is sit back and watch. I had to go on media outlets, and that's why I'm glad I'm here, so that I can let people know exactly what it was that I found. I have no axe to grind. Why would I make something like that up? And if you follow the breadcrumbs, it's all out there. And I have now since on other media outlets produced people in phone calls that say exactly what they were telling me in proof of what I'm saying, whether the family chooses to believe it or not.
So obviously we know the police haven't found Mr. Rounds. Do you have any idea where Dylan may be? I mean, there's a vast area out there. I mean, he could be anywhere, assuming worst case scenario. Best case scenario, like I said, he jumped in a truck and started over, on his way to Central America or something. What are your thoughts? I mean, what is your theory at this point based upon what you know, which is, you know, being on the ground and talking with people?
He's dead. That kid's gone. They're never going to. And if they find him, it's a bonus. I believe there's about a 98% chance that kid's dead. There's a 1% chance that he may be still somewhere based on the people that he was hanging around with. I mean, you put a 17-year-old kid who looks 13 with all this money, with people that don't even have running water in an area like that. The kid's mom even told me he's a little bit of an elitist. He's self-entitled. He's arrogant. You put him out there with $80,000. His grandfather gave him a $50,000 cash loan that the parents didn't know about. He had $30,000 squirreled away in an area where you don't even get water, let alone get to a bank every day. They know this kid's got money. They know he's a small person. They know he's not a tough guy. And he's hanging around people that are nasty. Well, I can't believe he lasted as long as he did. So if you're asking for my theory, and I have theories of parts to this case, but I don't know what happened to him, but I have a pretty good idea that there's probably a 98% chance that kid met his demise out there. I think it was either a robbery gone wrong. There's a 1% chance, which would take us to 99% total, that he is still locked away in a storage shed. Some of the people that he was hanging around with, Troy Wadsworth and Kurt Wadsworth's brothers, Troy and Scott Wadsworth, if you look at their criminal records, which are all online now, I was able to get those published, are all based on what that would be. They have kidnapped people. I have a nurse that talked to and worked with the three women that were kidnapped by Scott, one of the brothers of the Wadsworths, and she told me how that went down and how he did it. And they made their way to a mail center, a P.O. box, and got the cops involved and were able to escape. That's why they were charged before. This is not their first rodeo. So that kid's probably that way. The other 1% that would take us to the 100 would be something beyond belief. And let me give you an example. I had a case with a kid out of Idaho named Zachary Lee Brewer. He was gone for 17 years. Everybody thought he was dead. I found him in Veracruz, Mexico, almost decades later. And he was living like a homeless person, like a dog. He didn't even know who he was. Now, how does that happen? If my son was alive, he'd call me. He'd call his grandmother. He'd never not talk to me. Families all say that to me. He got run over by a car when he was in Mexico after being down there for 6 months, escaping some stuff that happened to him in Idaho. When he got out of the hospital 8 months later, he didn't know who he was, and Mexico just released him onto the streets. 17 years later, I find this guy's mom passed out when I showed her the picture. You never know why somebody goes missing, my friend. So it would be something of that ill.
Yeah, no, I mean, seriously, you know, I have a little thing I call the 12 undeniable truths of a criminal defense attorney. The 12 undeniable truths of life from the criminal defense attorney's perspective. And one of the items in that 12 is everybody has a secret or a second life, so to speak. And you just never know what people are doing and what other activities they're involved in, so to speak, that they don't want mom and dad and grandma and grandpa to know about, or, you know, their friends or what have you.
I would love to ask you, with your background, though, and knowing what you know, and especially with the law and understanding this more than the other shows I've been on. There have been a bunch of different people's shows I've been on. They're housewives or, you know, baseball coaches, and they, you know, they're school teachers, and they work at Arby's. They do this on the weekend. You have a law background. You've seen some of this. You have a college education and therefore. So what do you think happened to this kid? And if you were the family's attorney, which I begged them to get, and they said, why would we need an attorney? I begged them to get a law, somebody to represent them out there so I could work under them as well in different states. What would you advise the parents, and what do you believe happened?
Well, I mean, I think it's certainly leaning towards some sort of foul play. You know, as I understand the facts, the family goes to his house and they find his boots. They find some, what turns out to be a blood-like substance. I think the police confirmed it was blood, but they couldn't say whose blood it was. But, you know, people just don't necessarily, yes, they can pack up and go. But for a kid, it sounded like he was kind of living his dream out in the middle of nowhere, hanging out at the local bar, maybe doing a little bit of ranching or farming out there. Doesn't really have a whole lot of reason to go away. And particularly, sounds like grandpa was, making sure he had a pretty good safety net if anything went wrong. Why give that up? So I think I'm in agreement with you at this point, is it's probably some sort of foul play. Like you said, the characters out there, it could have been anybody. It could have been somebody just randomly stopping on a road, crime of opportunity. You just never know. And when you start getting out in the desert and then, the mountains and forest, people just don't appreciate, unless you've been there, how vast it is. And, you know, talk about a needle in a haystack for police to just say, all right, I think we're going to start here, you know, and then go from where, you know what I mean? So, it's tough. I mean, the family, you know, do they need an attorney? They probably should have one central person out there making statements. If you look, for example, on the Brian Laundrie matter, you know, the parents got an attorney. They're going to get bombarded. You need to have a point of contact. And, you know, if there's new information, bad information, good information, you need to have that one person that can go and distribute that. Oftentimes I get cases where, you know, the family wants to come in and hire me, and I got like eight people in my conference room. And I tell them, listen, I'm not picking up and talking the phone to eight of you people every time we go to court. You need to pick one person that I can talk to, and then you can disseminate that information out from there. I think it just makes sense to have somebody that's able to do that. And also, you know, procedure, like I said, the police work at their own pace. An attorney can say, hey, let's go hire this guy. Let's go drive down there ourselves. Let's, you know, you can make things happen.
Right. And the attorney also has the ability to bring in in-house investigators or private investigators.
Yeah, absolutely. You know,
I would like to, the thing that upset me the most about this, and if the family wasn't so ego driven or see, I wouldn't take direction from the mom, and she's the one spearheading this. It was a power struggle. She didn't hire me as well. But, you know, the thing that killed and is going to hurt the family the most, and this was mentioned on a news interview they did, is I have a phone number right here. 813-993-2242. You Google that, you'll see any case I've ever worked on. It's out there. It's been the same number for decades. It's my personal number. You call it right now, it'll ring. You're going to get me. No secretaries, no answering service. It's me. Yeah. And here's the deal. I had so many people, they're still calling me. They don't want to talk to cops out there. 74 out of 200 people are registered sex offenders. They're not going to get on the phone and call the Elko County Sheriff. Who knows what they got going on, even if it's for nothing to get the heat out of the town. They cut off their nose to spite their face, and they took freebies from web sleuths and advocate moms and different people online that want to be attached to this because, you know, it's exciting, it's entertainment, and they've got a narrative, a channel, a page, they're selling sweatshirts, whatever it is, and they're willing to do it for free. You know, now, even though I've already been paid, they could also control those people. They couldn't control me. So I think what happens here is the bottom line is, they get these people, and now there's people that are still calling me saying, well, I'll tell you, will you tell the family? I got a call today from a man who told me that Kurt Wadsworth's brother across from the bar has had the keys to a business that this guy turned into a house for 2 years. For two years, there's a house across their business that was an old business. So the bar is here. Across the street is a former business that was turned into a dwelling, a domicile, and that Troy Wadsworth, who had the scratches on his arms, the nail marks on his arms, I had the cops made them take pictures of, that he has had that building for 2 years with keys, and nobody knows because the owner's in California, and until this morning didn't even know this was going on. He's somewhere in San Diego in Orange County. So what that's going, and the FBI are on their way to that. Well, these people are calling me, and I says, why don't you call the cops? We're not calling the cops. Why don't you call the family? I'm not talking to that lady. What if she wants my name? I'm still getting phone calls from people in that town. So what the family did is they took off the most legitimate person to do nothing but take phone calls 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And I think in the long run, that's going to hurt them and might have today.
Yeah, I've said this many times on our show is that when it comes to cold cases or missing persons, you know, there's always someone somewhere that knows something. You just got to get that person to talk and to say something. And I've also said it, most cases don't turn on some legal, you know, great legal issue. It turns on who can find the better facts. And maybe that legal issue will be based upon who can find the best facts. And the only way you can do that is you have people out there talking to people. I've gone to many a crime scene shooting where no one would talk with, you know, us. We just start knocking on doors and they're like, well, I didn't talk to them, but they did. And oh, they wouldn't talk to us. Oh, hold on a second. Let me go over here and I'll talk to them. And next thing you know, they start talking. Generally, people want to talk, but a lot of people, particularly if they're skeptical to police, they're not going to do it. They're just simply not going to do it. So yeah, it's definitely the benefit of a private investigator. And you are like a lot of the private investigators that I use, you could get anybody to talk. So in a good way.
That's only because I'm so good looking. We both have that problem.
I know it's a curse, you know, but yeah. All right. So as of right now, you're not, I guess you're still working on the case. You've been paid. So you're still going to help. And if you come across the you know, the location of Dylan, certainly you're going to provide that. Have you talked to the police regularly, or are you giving them information that comes in?
One officer called me to tell me to stop spreading conspiracy theories. And at that point, I hadn't talked to anybody. I says, what conspiracy theories am I spreading? Because I don't know. I was just told that you were. I said, no, you need to go take a picture of the man with nail marks on his arm. That's not a conspiracy theory. That's a fact. If I'm wrong, I even offer the family a full money back guarantee if they looked at the phone of Kurt Wadsworth or took pictures and the nail marks on the arm of Troy Wadsworth did not exist. So I offered them a money back guarantee, a get out of jail free card. They wouldn't take it. So I'm not actively working on the case. I'm not looking for new leads. My phone never shuts off. I've been very lucky that I have. It's been kind of divided into two sides, but I've had radio and television shows all over the country interviewing me. My business is through the roof. I'm getting calls. It's not the reason I'm doing this. I'm doing this more to clear my name and to put what was out there so that when this is solved, they say, well, that guy wasn't totally nuts. So what I did was I wanted to make sure that I got this out in the public. I wanted to make sure that everybody knew what I knew and knew that what I said I put my name to. So I'm not actively looking on it. I'll take phone calls from anybody day or night. I got nothing better to do. And if they want to call me, then it is what it is. I've been paid in full, but I'm not actively working on the case. Now, if the family calls me 6 months from now and says, hey, we were wrong, we haven't found something, a year from now, 2 years from now, I'd pick right up where I left off. I don't have an ego that way, but they're going to have to come to me and say, hey, listen, you know, go ahead. It's your turn again. And I would do that for them at this point. They're probably watching right now. They do. They watch everything that I do. And they rebuttal everything that I say. But the one thing that's good about being a private investigator, at least in my shoes here, is I'll just sit back and watch. And sooner or later, somebody will be right and somebody will be wrong. And if I'm wrong, I pick up the next case. If I'm right, I got a lot more of these shows to do.
Sure. No, and it's, you know, like I said, you would think the parents or grandparents would want to work with you because, like I said, you have been paid. And the police, although now they're putting a lot of resources into it, you know, eventually that news cycle is going to run. You know, their personnel need to go on vacations. They have trainings to do. They're not going to be able to put the resources into it. So that's really the only way these kinds of things usually pan out is you got to follow every lead.
And I don't mean to interrupt you. I told the family this too. And this astounded them. You know, they were astounded by this. And I said, hey, listen, you got about another 25 days. They said, why? I said, you know, the National Football League kicks off in like a month. What's that have to do with it? Listen, this country goes into a coma when the National Football League kicks off and when college football kicks off. University of Colorado, Florida, Florida State, University of Washington, they kick off in those towns. Idaho, Idaho State, UNLV, University of Nevada at Reno. These kids are going to go back to college. This story is going to be a stain on the third page. Once college football starts, the dynamic of what's on television and what's in our newspapers, and I know because I have a background in college and pro, it totally changes. Hockey's ending, NBA's over, baseball's the only thing going on. The NFL comes here and people are like, hey, let's go. Tom Brady's last year. Dylan who? I says, you better get on this. I said, the same thing you did. So I appreciate you giving me the time on this. I sought you out for this because I respected what you did. I was told by people what you did. You handle this in a way that I think is how this should be handled, as opposed to somebody, you know, doing this as entertainment. You actually educate people on this, and you've educated me, and I appreciate that.
Well, thank you for, you know, reaching out with us. Thank you for taking the time. And hopefully, you know, one way or the other, because the family, whether it's good or bad, you know, they're going to want to know and they're going to need closure. But the only way you can really, you know, find the truth is you got to be able to face the facts, so to speak, and figure out where people may be. Hardest part of my job is telling people what they don't want to hear, but what they need to hear oftentimes in cases. And then, you know, it's not my job to make them feel good. It's to tell them the facts so they can make the best decisions that they can. And it sounds like that's what you were doing as well.
I'm trying, my friend. Thank you. God bless you.
All right. Thank you. All right. Thanks.